When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is your vehicle stopping like it should? Does it squeal or grind when you brake? Don't miss out on summer brake deals at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome to the latest episode of Five on the Floor on the Five Reasons Sports Network. Thanks for joining us on your favorite podcast app on Apple. Recommend Apple Podcasts. On Android, we recommend Spotify or the Five Reasons YouTube channel. Also, check out Off the Floor. That's our new Discord server. Again, $2.99 per month. Link is right here in the description. And there you can communicate with Heat fans and us all day long. In fact, we pulled the topic for this episode from our Off the Floor Discord. So that's one of the ways you can communicate with us, thanks to Variable 10X. We'll credit him today for the topic, a little bit of a tweak on something that we were going to do. So make sure you check out Off the Floor. Again, $2.99 per month. Also, check out Valvoline. Go to Valvoline.com. Actually, we want to tell you a little bit more about it before you go there. Sponsored by Valvoline. This episode is sponsored by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Excuse me. With oil changes complete in about 15 minutes, maintaining your vehicle is just a quick stop on the way to your summer destinations. Click the link in our bio to receive a coupon that saves $8 off Valvoline full service conventional oil change or $8 off full service full synthetic or diesel oil change. The coupon can be switched out with other offers. Again, check it out. The link is right here in the description. Check out Valvoline's instant oil change. Get ready for the summer. And now, today's episode.
Down to Biscayne. Yikes. Five on the floor. Ride for my dogs. Where here's the thing. You can check the score. Hustle hard, couple scars. Wearing bubble frogs. Just like Buck to say, you in trouble, y'all. Kept the floor clean. Got an all band. Y'all seen the block. Stop with one hand. And Pat, we trust, it's power, have the guts. We're here to bring the heat. Y'all can hang it up.
Welcome to Five on the Floor, a daily insider show on the Miami Heat and the NBA, featuring Ethan Skolnick, Greg Sylvander, and Alex Toledo, plus others from the Five Reasons Sports Network.
All right, welcome back to Five on the Floor. Here's today's floor plan. I want to try to get through this episode without stumbling, coughing, or anything like that, just getting over a cold. I'm Ethan Skolnick. You can follow me at Ethan J. Skolnick on Five Reasons Sports. We got Brady Hawk. You can follow him at Brady Hawk 305. And at Alex Toledo, you can follow him at Tropical Blanket. All right, so as I mentioned, this topic is pulled from our Discord server. We feel like we haven't done enough on Terry Rozier specifically, and so we wanted to get into him a little bit more. But there's sort of a larger context here, which is that as of right now, Terry Rozier and Tyler Hero are both on the roster. And we have talked about the fit, and I've been very negative about the fit. Very negative about the upside of it, just because, again, it's two smaller guards in an NBA that is getting bigger. And it's two guards that are not known primarily for their defense. I mean, Terry, I think at best you could say is maybe an average defender. Tyler has his moments, particularly off the floor, but we know that he gets hunted quite a bit. And so I think we want to spin this the other direction, and this was the idea that came out of our Discord. How do they make it work? Because there are going to be minutes that they're going to have to play together, whether they start or they don't. They're often going to close together with the current roster construction, and they're certainly going to play together during the game. Like, they're not going to be separated all the time, and there was some excitement about the two of them playing together last year, and it's something that I talked to Tyler about, and he said, you know, at a certain point, he thought that more of the attention was going to start going to Terry once Terry started shooting the ball better. Again, by the time that happened, Tyler was out. And then when Tyler came back, Terry was out. So we never really got to see it. I want to go to you first, Alex, because on some of the numbers stuff, you have, I think, clarified that as much as I've been negative on the Tyler-Terry combination, with a lot of these combinations, the Duncan-Terry combination has not really been better, right? I mean, so let's start there before we get into how they maximize this.
Well, yeah, that was one that I saw recently. And again, just to kind of couch all of this, like, a lot of this stuff with Terry, the line of data is very small sample. So I'm not trying to make, you know, declarations based on lineup data, but you know, there is stuff that you can look for trends, I guess. And I guess like the biggest trend that you can find when it comes to the Rozier and Tyler pairing is that the defensive rating is never great. And that does kind of, you know, it tracks with what the traditional thinking would be, that it's too small of a backcourt. What you do see a lot of times is that the offensive rating is much higher too. So it's one of these things where like the numbers are supporting what you would think, right? It's not very surprising, but like the other day, the one that I mentioned on the pod where, you know, the lineup with Terry, Tyler, and Bam, that three-man unit, was actually more effective than Terry Duncan and Bam, but Terry Duncan and Bam got a lot more playing time. So it's not exactly, you know, apples to apples. I just thought that was that specific one was just kind of interesting because you would think it would be the other way around. And there was kind of a big gap in net rating between those two. But that's just one example. Like when you look at Rozier and Tyler together, you know, overall without, you know, kind of filtering for certain guys on, certain guys off, if you just do Terry and Tyler, it's a negative 2.8 net rating. And it's a 119 offensive rating and a 122 defensive rating. So that's just kind of the broad view of it without getting into other kinds of combinations. But, you know, the gist of it is that their offense goes up, right? It makes sense. Like they have two guys who can score from different areas of the floor. I know people are not going to call Tyler a three-level scorer, but like both of those guys can score in different ways, can both shoot, can both create for themselves. Not the same type of player, but they give you more offense, and that's what the numbers are showing too. Then if you look at like Rozier, Tyler, Jimmy, and Bam together, right? What a lot of people would say is probably the four best players on the team. That comes out to a negative 1.3 net. So that's not exactly the most encouraging thing because, you know, that's kind of your core right there. You'd want them to play better together. Again, all of this is small sample size. This one, for example, is only 118 minutes. And it's a similar thing. 118 offensive rating, 119 defensive rating. So I think they have to figure out ways to mitigate kind of the problems with their defense while also trying to maximize having an extra creator on the floor at all times. You know, one of the ones that was really good, just interestingly enough, and this is only in 44 minutes, so really a minuscule sample size. Terry plus Tyler plus Bam. That's the one I mentioned before, right? Plus 15 net rating. And then you look at Terry plus Tyler plus Jimmy without Bam, minus 45. And that's in 22 minutes. So again, these are really, really small sample sizes. Yeah. We really just need to see like a lot more, you know, to get an actual fair sample. But yeah, it's just kind of all over the place right now.
All right, so let's get to it. I mean, 22-minute sample size. I mean, even I and we know sometimes I pull on, you know, pull from the sample, small sample size theater. Wasn't that Christian Hernandez's thing on Miami Heat?
Yeah. Yeah, shout out Christian. Theater.
He even had music for that. He had he had a whole thing that went with that. I 22 minutes, I can't. You know, it's too little. I have to know who they were playing, what the circumstances were, all of that. But it is interesting to me that the Rozier Robinson thing. Now, again, when you can pull these numbers, anything. By the time that Rozier got going, Duncan had kind of fallen apart physically. So I think that needs to be read into it also. Like there are sort of, yeah. I don't know, there are other factors, there are extenuating factors to all of this. It would seem on paper, though, that Rozier and Robinson would work depending on what you want your point guard to be. And that's part of what I wanted to get into here, because I think that plays into the Rozier hero combination, but also plays into some of these point guards that are trying to impress the Heat right now, whether it's Drew Smith, who already has the two-way, or Zion Pullen, or Isaiah Stevens, right? Like all of these, the Heat don't ask the same thing from their point guards typically in the Spoelstra era that other teams ask of their point guards. Not as ball dominant. Even during the Big Three era, Mario Chalmers, Norris Cole played very much off the ball, playing off of superstars. Before we get to Hero and Rozier, should the Robinson-Rozier combination work, Brady, if Duncan is healthy?
100%. It definitely should. They're kind of like the perfect fit in terms of what you want your offense to be. And like you said, there's circumstances to those numbers. Like when Duncan originally had it going, Terry was just trying to get acclimated and the shot wasn't falling. And then Terry got the shot to start falling. And then Duncan's back got messed up and he kind of started tailing off toward the end of the season. So like their peaks never really lined up, it feels like, in the regular season. So I think that matters. But 100%, they fit in terms of Duncan not needing the ball in his hands, Terry being in a position where he's more comfortable, what he's more used to, where he can kind of just dictate for others and kind of play that role. And like, they got to a point where they were trying to force Tyler into like this ghost screening role where they wanted to do guard actions. But it's so much more natural for Duncan because it's Duncan's, that's his home base, like slipping screens into threes, forcing mismatches for Terry. Like, that's what they wanted to get to. And it felt like they actually got good offense around it. But I think we're focusing on the guards for good reason. But like, when you bring up Terry Tyler or Terry Duncan, I don't think it's just the backcourt thing. Like, I think it's more so about who's next to the two guards. Like, that's where it is for me. Like, it's, I think Terry and Tyler could work. I'm higher on that than I think most people for the offensive side of things. Defensively, I am worried about it. Like, I think you have to really put the right guys around those guys defensively to make it last, like to really put like valuable minutes together throughout a regular season game. But the offense, I think they can get around it if they run the right lineups. Like, you were talking about some of the numbers, Alex, and like some of the stuff, like the, when you was like Jimmy, Bam, Terry, Tyler, where it's like their main players, it really was a little bit rougher. Like, there were certain points where it's like they need to work as a, like as a whole, because there's so much usage to be spread around, because it's not just Terry and Tyler. And I know everybody wants to put a lot on Tyler, but it is kind of everybody trying to figure out their role. And in this hypothetical situation, where we're kind of expecting Jimmy in a contract season to have the ball a little bit more, I'd say, in the regular season. Like, we're expecting him, I guess, to be have that little bit of an extra edge offensively in this regular season. It takes a little bit more usage as well. So they're going to have to find that combination, I guess. But like, I was thinking about certain lineups, because you do have to kind of stagger them a little bit. And in some ways, I kind of feel like them going big is beneficial to the two. Like, if you hypothetically, as everybody wants to talk about, like the Ware Bam lineups, I'm a fan of it with Terry and Tyler. Like, if you're going to put two guys out there defensively that can get picked on, how about you have a guy in Bam weak side that could cover things up, and Ware, who's just a big body and drop that could kind of close things off in the rim when things break down. So it's like, it's more so about that. The issue with the Terry Tyler lineups is like, you're looking around at those lineups and it's Kevin Love trying to recover on a blitz with Terry and Tyler. And then all of a sudden you're on a 4-on-2 backside and things break down. So I think that is what needs to be figured out. Like, putting the Haywoods of the world, the Keshawn Johnsons now, the Wares, like all these different lineups they can put together. But offensively, I'm not worried, but they do. Terry's spot up three definitely is going to dictate a lot of it. Like, if he's shooting the way he was late in that regular season last year, it's going to work. Like, they're not going to have any worries about it. And if he's just shooting the volume of threes that he was shooting, it can 100% work. So I'm not worried about them working together. It's more about their individual selves, like putting themselves and taking the right shots and being in the right spots on the floor.
Well, Alex, to that point, I mean, when we've talked about Tyler, there is a perception that his usage takes away from efficient usage for others. That I don't know if that's fair, but that is a common fan perception. And it was a fan perception even when he was shooting like 47, 39, 85 at one point last season. Like, these are not Jordan Poole numbers. Like, he was, I mean, his efficiency dropped as the year went on, and obviously he got hurt. And then he had the one incredibly efficient game in the playoffs, and the other four were not. But like, he hasn't been like this, you know, the perception of him as a chucker is just not fair based on the numbers that he puts up. I mean, chuckers don't shoot close to 40% from three on reasonably high volume. But there is a perception, again, that his usage is detrimental to the team, because you would rather have Jimmy have the usage. I think there are other factors involved in that. It sort of shows Jimmy's overall engagement in it, or Bam to have the usage in places. But honestly, I mean, Tyler's efficiency numbers are as good or better than Rozier's, and yet it seemed like there are Heat fans who wanted more of it to tilt to Rozier. Is this unfair to Tyler, and can he be efficient with Terry?
I think so. I definitely think, as far as the second question, that he can be efficient with Terry. Like I said, kind of what I was saying before with the numbers, a lot of the stuff there is really like the defense is a problem when they're on the floor together, not the offense. And honestly, I think that tracks. So what we were seeing, like when we did get to see them play together, specifically Tyler and Terry, I think Tyler was starting to play a little bit more off ball, and I think they were starting to incorporate that a little bit more. And he was very, and again, like, I know a lot of people are very cynical about this and don't really think that he'll continue to take those steps and grow into that type of player who is more off ball than on ball. And whatever, like, that's fine. You can have that opinion, but Tyler was, you know, publicly at least very open about playing that way. I thought he was, you know, going in that direction, you know, when they actually did get to play to play together, and the results were decent. Like, again, they were not world beaters. You know, when all their best players were on the floor at the same time, it wasn't great. But as far as when them two were playing together with one more guy, because what I did notice, just a kind of a side note, is that when you take off one of those four guys, a lot of times the three-man units were good. The only one that was terrible was the one that I mentioned before with Terry, Tyler, and Jimmy with no Bam. But outside of that, like, the other combinations of three of those four were pretty good, and specifically on the offensive end. And so, to me,
I'm just curious before you continue. If the fourth guy is Love instead of Bam, what does that look like?
I mean, I'll have to get those numbers. Okay. You're saying,
I mean, every grouping dips though when it's not Bam in the lineup, so it's like, yeah, it's not even
but
on those.
Some of them
guys
didn't, like, but Brady, some of them didn't dip with Love. That's why I'm asking. Well, I mean, some of the ones with Jimmy and Love,
yeah,
together,
the Jimmy,
right?
And K Love lineups were fantastic. Those were great throughout the season, and were very good for them the season before as well. But if you're talking about Terry, Tyler, and Love, and Jimmy,
I feel like this is probably a tiny sample size, right? Yeah. Because Kevin got hurt. I'm just trying to, again, someone said this was due to lack of availability, which is, I know people are going to say I'm feeding into the Heat's narrative here, but, like, it's true. Like,
30 minutes.
There were just. Well, I mean, there were just times that these guys just didn't get a chance to play together for one reason or another. Now, that's an organizational issue that has to be addressed, and they've talked a lot about it, and apparently they're trying to address it. But
this might have been one of the only lineups that wasn't good between Jimmy and Kayla, because they had 13 minutes, the four of them, Terry, Tyler, Jimmy, and Love.
See,
13 minutes, they were almost a minus 35 in net rating. Again, that's a tiny sample size.
But see, that's awful. Ways, it's the fact that they only got 13 minutes out of it. That's the real problem. The real problem is not the minus 35. The real problem is they got
the 143 defensive rating.
Okay, I guess that's
why I'm saying, though, like, the lineups around the two make kind of are the bigger deal to me. Like, you cannot do that to Kevin. Like, it's not Kevin's fault, but, like, you can't put him in that position where he's the guy who's supposed to cover up for these two guards. Like, it's a problem. So that's kind of thing. And Spo, I feel like I trust him to figure out a lot of these things with the two of them. But to your point, he only has 13 minutes to figure it out. Like, he doesn't have the time to piece these things together. And that's also, that feels like what the organization wants to see more of.
I'm more positive about, like, I just think them staggering and kind of figuring out the lineups around them, like Brady's talking about, I feel a lot better about, like, that part of it than, like, I think the onus on them this season is going to have to be on those guys starting together. Because Spoke is surprises, right? But and it could be Duncan instead of Tyler or something, like it was at the end of the season. But if, like, we're all kind of expecting Terry, Tyler, Nico to start around Jimmy and Bam, the onus is going to be on Spo and them to figure out how to make that lineup gel. And I think it's going to be tough because you've got four guys who you can run offense for, and then, you know, you can count Jovic in there too. But Jovic is very much a connective piece in that lineup. And so I just think, like, it's more about that, getting those guys to figure out how to play together. Because I think once you start getting into different lineups, like, I'm not as worried because it's less creators on the floor and they can kind of go back to playing more of their game. And, you know, it's good to have an extra creator that you can, you know, you can always have at least one of them on the floor. And I think that's what you can feel good about. But I don't think you have to 100% stagger where, like, they're never playing together during the regular season. Because frankly, like, you need to figure this out. Because for as much as you want it, you could stagger in the playoffs. Like, both of those guys, if they're on your team, when the playoffs start, if you're in the playoffs, you know, they're going to be playing a lot of minutes. So you got to figure out what works and doesn't work.
They also make $53 million between them this year. So, I mean, if you can't play them together, that's a problem. Particularly because, again, a lot of us were in favor of the trade, but I want to be clear on one other thing here too, and then I will get to our sponsor, and then I want to get into a sort of a generic question about point guard play for this team. Which is that this idea that I see a lot on our off the floor, which is to me a very high end level of Heat fan. I'm not just saying that because they're paying the $2.99 a month. I'm saying it because they're engaged in this stuff and a lot of them follow the numbers and such. A lot of them are kind of saying, well, you got Terry with the idea of trading Tyler. I don't think they got Terry with the idea of trading Tyler. I think that trading Tyler has always been kind of an option depending on the circumstances, the players available, fit, and all the rest of that. But I don't think this was, okay, we're basically getting Terry at $24 million roughly over 2 years, as opposed to Tyler with, what, 3 years left, you know, at roughly close to $30 million a year. And we're essentially getting a cheaper player with some creation. I don't think they were tending that. I think it gives them more flexibility to trade Tyler, but I don't think it was, okay, we're getting him to replace Tyler. I really don't believe that. If somebody wants to correct me on that, they can. But I've never heard that. And so I know Heat fans have kind of played into this. Like, well, now you got them both on the roster. What are you going to do? You weren't supposed to have both on the roster. No, that was not really the case. Like, it was an option to have them both on the roster or not. And they do right now. And so they got to figure out a way to make it work. All right. Want to mention a great sponsor of the Five Reasons Sports Network. Consider talking about making it work. Make yourself some money here. PrizePicks.com. Use the code 5, F-I-V-E. Hopefully my soccer plays hit tonight. Use the code 5. Get that original deposit match up to $100. Again, it's F-I-V-E. You can play anything there pretty much. They've got still got, like, even without the NBA and the NHL right now, they got like 10 sports on there that you can play. Set your lineups for up to 4 players. Win on the power play. And again, you can win big. So go to prizepicks.com. Use the code 5, F-I-V-E. Get that initial deposit matched up to $100. Still, honestly, still the best fantasy game, even with some of the changes here in the state of Florida.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for Five on the Floor on the Five Reasons Sports Network. These days, all of us are operating in an information technology space. And that is dangerous. And that's why I signed up for Incogni. You can find it at incogni.com. That's incogni.com/5floor. That's F-I-V-E-F-L-O-O-R, name of this podcast. And you get 60% off an annual plan. Now, why should you do this? Because data brokers are out there creating shadow profiles on you that include a frightening amount of personal details. These insights are then used by scammers, total strangers, insurance companies, banks, businesses, and even the government. You want to avoid the identity theft, the increased costs, and all of the things that come with this. So you got to sign up for Incogni. They will go through the entire process with you and begin that data removal. So again, you can be safer in this online space. So check it out, incogni.com. Again, that's incogni.com/5floor, spelled out 5floor, and you get 60% off an annual plan.
Save big on all your back to school needs, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on our full line sale of delicious fresh Tyson chicken with your card. Then get 6 ounce packs of juicy raspberries or blackberries for $1.67 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Point guard position in general. Okay. Because, look, I came up during the time where, you know, again, Pat had Magic. Little hard to compare anybody to him. Okay. Then he goes to New York. He had Doc Rivers. He had Chris Childs, Charlie Ward. Childs might have come in with Van Gundy. So if I'm missing the year there, I apologize. I think Charlie Ward was there when he was there. Derek Harper was the other one. So, and Derek and Doc were both accomplished, you know, bring the ball up the court point guards. I mean, Derek Harper could play off the ball. Doc was a very good defender. I mean, all the jokes about Doc as a coach. He was a very good NBA player, particularly when he was with the Hawks. Derek Harper was an excellent NBA player when he was with the Mavericks. Both of them were a little up in age, played for him there. He comes to Miami, and what does Pat do in his first full season? He trades for Tim Hardaway, who was, at the time, sort of banished to the bench behind B.J. Armstrong, of all people. This was not even Chicago B.J. Armstrong. Tim was basically considered to be cooked. Pat went out and got him in a trade. Tim changed his game, to play in Miami, became more of a half-court player with a knuckleball jumper and all that stuff, and ended up in the Hall of Fame, okay? So he had a floor general. Like, things went through Tim. Tim was the heartbeat of that team. People talk about Zoe. And yes, Zoe set the standard and all the rest of that stuff. But Tim was the barometer. If Tim was playing well, they won. That's kind of how it worked with them. You kind of knew what you were getting from Zoe. So after Tim, and he fades out, they had a bunch of guys, Anthony Carter, sort of an older Travis Best, etc. Dwayne briefly, right? And then they sort of went to this off-ball point guard thing. It was Damon Jones for a year. Now, Jay Will was not. He was the opposite of that before he came to Miami. But, like, they coached it out of him to the point that, like, we were begging for him to be white chocolate. Like, it was like, you know, he was like, I mean, Jay Will conformed completely, okay? You get out of that, though, and then you get to the big three era, and I mentioned it was Chalmers, who Rio was not a conventional bring-up-the-ball point guard. He was more of an off-the-ball guy, defend, okay, very valuable to those teams. Norris, to a certain extent, was sort of like that also. He improved his jumper while he was with Miami. And so they really haven't. And then, you know, they go after Dragic, who was more of a scorer from the position, Lowry, who was kind of cooked. I mean, let's just be honest, okay? So it's hard for me to get a read on what exactly they're looking for or supposed looking for from his point guards. And Brady, I want to put this into the context, not just of Rozier, but of the others who are in the mix now. Because this Isaiah Stevens is really interesting. Like, he is a traditional, don't turn the ball over, get the ball to the guy in the right place point guard. Drew Smith, for all the jokes, is a pretty good defender, actually, okay? Was showing that last year. And Zion Poland seems to have some athleticism, a little bit of wiggle. What do you think they're looking for in a point guard, and how does that play? Because Josh is not a point guard. Like, they're using Josh as a temporary point guard. He's not a point guard. What do you think they're looking for at the position?
So I think they're looking, when they're talking about a starting point guard and a backup point guard, I think they evaluate it in two totally different ways. I think, like, when you're talking about a starting guy like Rozier, you mentioned with Goron, like, they're not looking for a set your guy up starting point guard because they have a rest of the roster that can do it. They have guys, their four man and Nico can run an off, like, set up a half court offense. Their five man, even though he doesn't think he's a five, in Bam, can set up an offense. You have so many different valves that they want a guy more so that can play off the ball. As for, like, a backup point guard, I think it's more like they want the guy who's going to have the ball in his hands the least. They want the guy that could just get the ball to your trigger in the half court and move on. You want the guy that can make the right decision. Stevens is a guy, like you said, perfect example. He's just a really good under control point guard that can make the right passes. He makes really good reads. Poland, I feel like, is the same way. Under control, doesn't make turnovers. Drew Smith, as you said, same thing. That's why they like him. That's why they keep bringing him back. As much as people, he's been compared to Poirier and Alondes Williams, they don't want the guy that's going to be all over the place offensively that could score the ball at a high level. They want the guy that could get the ball to the NBA level guys that are rotation pieces, that can get out the way, that can defend on the other end, and just not be a liability, I guess. So I think they evaluated in two totally different ways, but they can be – Spo will be lenient with the starting guy, like with the high-talented player. Like, you just get that guy and you find him a way to place him to that system where it's like, if you start working in these undrafted guys, you need the guy that's just going to make the least mistakes. It's really that simple. So it helps with the roster they have. As much as we talk about their roster construction, the fact that they have so many passing bigs and wings, it allows them to be a little bit – they could transform their guard position and scoring, I guess, in different ways. But Spo would be mad that you even asked that question about the point guard position, because he probably doesn't even think the point guard position is a thing anymore. Like, they just want guys that are, it's a guy that's at the top of the key, a guy that's screening, a guy that does this and that. So last thing I want to say really quickly, because I wanted to hit on it before from the first half of the episode, like, talking about things that, like, certain guys can do, like, I think that everybody could transform. Like, we're talking about Tyler off the ball or Rozier off the ball. One thing that I'm curious at seeing, just a random thing I was thinking about when you guys were bringing it up, I think it was in 2020 when Jimmy was – like, doing a lot of things off the roll, like screening a lot and playing in that short roll area, where if he decides, like, I could play in this role and get easy opportunities, push shot, mid-range, play off the roll with these guys, try to force mismatches, like, that opens up so much. Like, if he's playing in these positions next to Tyler and Rozier that is just trying to set up this starting lineup, if he can, instead of sitting in the corner or just kind of holding the ball a lot and playing these different roles, if he could just, like, transform into a little bit more rolling and screening, I feel like it opens up so much for those guards. So it's like, I know all the blame gets put on the backcourt specifically, but I think it's more so about creating an offense. And to be honest, it's not on Spo because he doesn't have the opportunity to look into a lot of this stuff. But I'm just curious to see, like, if with a full offseason, with knowing what your roster is and kind of getting a temperature check, I guess, on who you have, like, I just want to see how they transform. Because they're running it back, but they can't run back the same exact formula. Like, they have to change the formula on some things offensively. It can't just be the same things we saw late in the regular season.
Yeah, we've seen Spo do these transformations in the offseason. I think part of it, Alex, is that we talk about the point guards. Again, a lot of it depends on who else they have on the roster. And I mentioned, like, Rio and Norris were kind of off the ball point guards because they had LeBron and Dwayne, you know, to be the hubs of their offense. And in some ways, you know, he's made Jimmy and Bam that during this period of time. But do you think a role – would Rozier go beyond the Dragic role as a creator?
What do you mean by that? I'm a little confused by the question.
In other words, I don't want to ask it again.
Sorry, my fault. I should have – So, look, what I understood the question as was, like, can he be more than Goran as far as, like, a scorer, right? So Goran has, like, that reputation of being, like, that scoring point guard that the Heat have been lacking, who can get to the rim, who can score at all three levels. And, you know, they've been lacking ever since, right? And I think Terry has kind of got some of that pressure. I think Terry, like, and we talked about this while he was here too, like, he has really exceeded expectations as a passer. And that doesn't mean, like, he's elite. He's up there with, like, the superstars. But as, like, as far as, like, a sub-all-star type of player, I think he's up there as far as passing. And when you look at, like, some of the numbers, he had his highest assist percentage in the league by far last year, and also did it while keeping his turnovers down. He had basically a 26.5 assist percentage, which finished in the 90th percentile, and a 9 turnover percentage, which was in the 80th percentile. So he does a good job not only taking care of the ball but making plays. All that being said, I wouldn't consider him a pass first point guard. Like, he looks for his bucket, right? I think he is somebody who will look to get paint touches, and that is beneficial for the Heat as well. Not a great finisher, but gets to the paint and can create for others after doing that. And I think that's an important layer of offense that they, you know, got when they traded for him. But, you know, the fact that he can play off ball, I think this is kind of like what makes Terry so intriguing, right? Is that if you just look at him individually, like, it's a lot of facets that he adds to the Heat. When you talk about on ball, being able to create in the paint, when you talk about off ball, a guy who has been known as a streaky shooter, but I pretty much trust the shot. I just think, like, he is somebody who can get in rhythm by taking some higher difficulty ones because he's just good at it, right? Like, he's pretty good at taking shots off a screen, but he can play on or off ball. And that's what's so intriguing to me about Terry, because it doesn't have to just play one way. But usually when you talk about a player like that, they're also not this good at passing and creating for others. So, you know, I just want to give him the credit there, because I think he is kind of a better passer, at least than I remember. Maybe this is wrong here. Maybe it's a little bold, but I feel like he is better. He might be a better passer than Goran was. And I think Goran was just a much, much, much better finisher at the rim. And I think that's kind of what I've seen separate the two the most, because they don't have an exactly similar game, but, like, the way they play, like, Terry, I think is a better, like, kind of off the dribble shooter, right? Like, high difficulty shots, you know, a step back. I think he's better at that than Goran. I think they're both pretty good passers, so I'm not trying to say, like, Goran sucked as a passer or anything like that. But Terry, like, you got to give him his fair share. He's not just a bucket-getting point guard.
And I'm going to choke. Yeah,
yes.
I wanted to take the ball from you here.
Thank you.
As much as we talk about, like, the off-ball stuff and him adapting, like, they didn't get this guy. Like, this is just about fit purposes, because they didn't get this guy just to be an off-ball, you know, role-playing point guard like Gabe Vincent. Like, they got this guy. They went all in on this type of trade to put them over the top in this way that I don't want it to sound like they're limiting him. Like, they need him to play his game. Like, he's not going to go all out and put a bunch of shots up like he did in Charlotte, but they need him to be an on-ball pick-and-roll threat. They need him to be a pull-up three-point threat. They need him to be getting to the rim and finishing at a much higher level than he did at a good portion of the regular season. But he has to be getting volume. As much as we talk about splitting up the usage and this and that, he has to kind of get those reps. And as much as we want a guy like Khalil Ware to play, and he's kind of the hot topic this offseason, if there's anybody I want to see him play with, it's Terry Rozier. Like, I want to see that pick and roll, because he's the one guy that could throw that ball up top and kind of get him some opportunities just as a lob threat and everything else. So I just want to make that point, because we're kind of putting it in the context of, like, trying to make these lineups work and the off-ball stuff and his shot falling, changing things. But, like, they really just need him to play his game and just be himself in a lot of ways for this offense, because this offense isn't pretty.
Neither is my presentation tonight. I'm going to close it there. I'll just say this about Goron. He became a better passer over time, I think, particularly as a lob thrower. But you're right. It was mostly to get his, you know, for the majority of his Heat tenure. There was a willingness. I will say Rozier, the low turnover thing with Rozier is really interesting, too. He doesn't really make a ton of those mistakes, which is a real positive there. So, again, we'll see where it goes. But I wanted to make the point, like, one of the reasons we did this episode is that I don't think this was looked at by the Heat as a replacement for Tyler Hero. There was some consideration of how the two of them would look together, and adjustments are going to have to be made by both. But also, Spo has had to spend most of this offseason, I know he's with Team USA right now, but obviously thinking about how do I maximize this situation? And this is who we got. We got $53 million tied up in these two players. Like, I can't play them each 24 minutes. Like, that's not the way that this is going to go. They have to play some together. So appreciate Brady and Alex drilling down on that. Hopefully I'll be better by tomorrow. Alex, you want to cut any of that out? I don't mind it. Check out Valvoline, the link right here in the description. And also, by the way, not drinking soda is probably not the best thing for this, and probably not the best thing for me in general. So I'm not a good role model on any of this stuff. Drink water, everybody. All right, also check out Prize Picks. Use the code 5. Have a good one, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the 5 on the Floor on the 5 Reasons Sports Network. After all, someone needs to listen to my dad.